I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, an Olympia school board candidate who helped us stand up for parental rights is now under attack from trans activists. Plus, as far as the Portland media is concerned, the riots outside an ICE facility there are just a block party. It's just a block party. And in an area dealing with an immense homelessness crisis, residents seem absolutely perplexed as to why jugs of urine are being left on their front yards. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com, and click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, friends, and welcome to Undivided on this Thursday. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Yes, we do have to talk about jugs of urine on the show today. Nicole's already over there gagging about it. I didn't want to edit the photos. One of the jugs of urine is very, very dark, and I think that that individual probably should go to a hospital immediately. I digress. As you know, we don't like when people mess with our friends, and we will stand up for our friends, especially friends who have stood up for us. About two summers, it was about this time 2 years ago in the summer, we were going around the state collecting signatures on an initiative dealing with parental rights. And at the time, and I would say this was even more of a taboo topic in a state like Washington 2 years ago, where, oh my gosh, you're pushing for parental rights and, you know, you want parents to be able to know if their kid goes to school and identifies as a girl instead of a boy. That's so transphobic of you. And so at the time, I remember it being kind of difficult to get businesses and establishments to agree to host us for these initiative signings, because they were worried, understandably so, that there would be this unhinged backlash against them in the community. Nevertheless, some brave souls stepped up to do the right thing and to host us for these events. One of them was Cutter Point Coffee Company, owned by Ryan Smith and his wife, and they were great. And this is in Lacey, so it was kind of belly of the beast stuff. And we knew that Olympia nearby is very, very far left. They certainly have a big Antifa, Trantifa contingent, the school board and all of that, very far left. And so I think Ryan and his wife knew, like, this is probably a risk to our business to host Brandi and team for this signature gathering event, but they did it anyway. And, you know, it became pretty clear that there was going to be some backlash toward them. In fact, as we hosted the event, we were protested. We were called transphobes, and you had the whole, you know, rainbow mob outside harassing people as they came and went. And there's Ryan trying to just move him off his private property. But Ryan took it all in good stride and didn't shut down the event. Curiously, his coffee shop, the windows were busted in, gosh, a couple weeks later, maybe a month later, in a quote unquote robbery. I tend to think it was probably Trantifa coming in and trying to mess with us and do something. So that happened. And he was like, okay, you know, but we still believe in what we did here. And so I don't have a problem with it. So Ryan, in fact, has decided to get even more involved. And he has decided to run for Olympia School Board. And as you know, we focused on the Olympia School District and the school board in our documentary Operation Indoctrination, because I really believe it's one of the wokest, most backward school districts in the nation. And they desperately need some sane people who want to focus on academics, who want to get away from radical gender ideology. They need those people on the school board. And Ryan has stepped up and said, hey, you know, we've got four kids, some who've already graduated from Olympia, some who are still in the Olympia School District. On his website, he talks about his campaign being about balance, trust, safe schools, teacher support. He says he met his wife of 27 years in a ceramics class. In the ceramics class, we didn't have one of those in high school, but at the Olympia School District. He said, I was a teacher in the Olympia School District, and my wife also worked in OSD. We have a deep connection to the Olympia community. We're saddened to see how recent decisions by the district have led to declining enrollment and increased focus on ideology over education and the threat of school closures due to budget shortfalls. So he's running to serve the community and to restore, you know, parental trust, certainly, in the school district after a long list of incidents involving indoctrination of kids. Again, you can watch our documentary Operation Indoctrination to know why he's running. And he just wants to, I think what most parents want is to send their kids to school, not to have secrets kept from them about what's happening with their kids at schools, not to have teachers indoctrinate their kids in some radical ideology and make them future members of the Democratic Party. So that's why Ryan Smith is running. But even 2 years later, the fact that he hosted an event with us about parental rights is now coming back to haunt him, at least as far as the far left Trantifa ideologues are concerned. So Ryan kicked off his campaign on June 8th at a friend of his bar. His friend's name is Nicole. And it is relevant, I think, to mention Nicole is a lesbian. Not my Nicole, but his friend Nicole. So he's got a friend named Nicole, owns a bar, happens to be a lesbian. And he's not holding that up as some like, look at me, I'm pro-LGBTQ because I have a friend that's a lesbian. It just happens to be that this bar is sort of known in the community as being owned by a lesbian and therefore being maybe more LGBTQ friendly, as if every bar in Washington state isn't LGBTQ friendly. Give me a break. He hosts this. Whoa, Reddit Olympia didn't like that. The little left-wing Redditors didn't like that. So now not only are they attacking Ryan because of his connection to us, but they're also attacking this lesbian bar owner for daring to host this transphobe who's friends with Brandy Cruz. It says Nicole's bar is not queer friendly. Friendly reminder that although Nicole has tried to pass her bar off as an LGBTQIA friendly place, her co-owner is Andy, somebody else, who has regularly posted transphobic rhetoric, and they're hosting a school board campaign kickoff for Ryan Smith, a pastor who previously held an event harmful to trans youth at the Cutter Point location that he and his wife own. Apparently, our event was harmful to trans youth. That's news to me. Queer folks and allies spending money at Nicole's helps line the pockets of transphobes like Thielen who support political candidates like Smith. There's no amount of rainbow washing that makes that acceptable. So I think they mean that they're suggesting Ryan is trying to rainbow wash himself as not a transphobe because he has a lesbian friend who owns a bar. But I want you to look, and there's more, but I really want you to think of the thought process here. So going back 2 years ago, we hold an event that has nothing to do with targeting trans children. It's about parental rights and making sure parents know what's happening with their kids at school. So because Ryan and his wife opened up their coffee shop to us, we're obviously transphobes. I mean, that's a given. Ryan and his wife are transphobes, and anyone Ryan associates with, even if it's a lesbian, hates the LGBTQ plus community. So that's the way of thinking there. And it's not even enough to like just disagree and make your disagreement known. They have to try to go after Ryan's business. They have to try to go after his friend's business. Don't spend money here, all of these things, because these are truly unhinged individuals. And it doesn't stop there. Ryan Smith started to notice, shock of all shocks, that his Ryan Smith for school board signs were going missing in the Olympia area. We caught one of the suspects on video. There they are. Orange helmet. I don't know if it's a boy or a girl. That might also explain, you know, maybe the reason they're stealing the signs. So caught on video, clear as day, stealing Ryan Smith's campaign signs for Olympia School Board. Ryan has filed a report with the Olympia Police Department, and we will now, of course, because you go after our friends, we go after you, we will now seek to have this individual identified and criminally prosecuted. And we will use like our 500,000 person social media reach, and we will do everything we can until that person is identified. And it's just unhinged. And we have that's a pretty good image. I also included, Nicole, if you can bring up a still. I'm sorry, but that orange bike helmet sticks out like a sore thumb. And then also, you know, look at the bike there. It's got some red handles on it. Maybe you recognize there's a little tattoo, I think, on the back of one of the calves, maybe something. It could be a shadow, but it could also be a tattoo. But that's a pretty good image. So I feel like after the show today, we're going to post this. We're going to get this person identified. We're going to get some justice for Ryan Smith and his Olympia School District campaign. But this just shows you the mentality of the left. Like, it's not enough just to disagree and to bring your ideas forth and to say, here's our candidate who we support, and this is, but they have to take it so far that they want to hinder the ability of other citizens to even know about or hear about the message of another candidate. Because they know they can't win on the merits. When they have to debate on the actual merits of keeping secrets from parents, of transing kids in schools, of pushing radical gender ideology and political ideology onto kids, they know that's a losing message. And so it's like, well, we can't be a battle of ideas here. So we got to steal his signs. We got to try to alienate him and ruin his friends' businesses so his friends won't stand up for him or won't donate to his campaign or won't host events for him because we'll make it too unsafe for them to do so. And that's what the radical left and Trantifa has always been about. They want to bully people into silence. They want to bully people into not speaking up, into not running for school board, because there are individuals who will give in to that. If they're not, you know, like Ryan, I mean, he's been willing to put up with a lot. He put his business on the line to host us, and now he's putting himself out there again because he believes that he can improve the Olympia School District, and he's got thick skin, so he's willing to stand up to some of this. But not everyone will, and I don't necessarily blame them. You've got a family, you've got a business, and you're not ready to be protested out front as transphobes or absolutely harassed on the internet as being anti-LGBTQ, etc. So you have a lot of reasonable people who will give in to bullying like this and criminal conduct like this, because it is criminal to steal people's campaign signs. So I'm glad Ryan's not giving in. I'm glad he's pushing back and fighting back. We will help him in that regard because he helped us when we needed him, and because he's sane, and we need sane people like him on the Olympia School Board in particular. So we'll get that information out there, you orange-helmeted extremist. We shall find you in the Olympia Police Department. Hopefully, we'll take it seriously when we do. Speaking of left-wing lunatics, so the last, 2 weeks outside the ICE facility in Portland have been wild. Our friend Katie Davis Court has been down there. We should get Katie on soon, because she goes undercover. She got this video. Oh, we should have played this today. She's like, so she's undercover so they don't see her and assault her as they normally do. And two of these Antifa rioters go around the corner and just start going at it, making out. Leg against a wall, leg up, and just apparently rioting is horny business. And they were just so turned on by their rioting that they just had to go around the corner and just get it on. So she's had fascinating video from all this, but it's also been incredibly serious. I mean, we've talked on the show about there have already been federal charges against around 10 Portland Antifa rioters. One of them threw a machete at a member of law enforcement. And they've been trying to blind members of law enforcement with lasers. So the federal charges against these Portland Antifa members have been incredibly serious, as we've discussed. But if you read Coin6 News, it's just a block party. This is an honest-to-God headline about all of this. Protesters gather for anti-ICE block party outside federal facility in South Portland. And look, these protesters, rioters, called it a block party. Oh, we're just having a block party. And Coin puts it in quotes. But that doesn't mean that Coin has to use the verbiage of the criminals to water it down. And how stupid, because in the first, the first sentence, federal agents deployed flashbangs and pepper balls during a protest that gathered outside the Immigration and Customs Enforcement facility in South Portland late Tuesday night. So it focuses on the federal agents, and then they call it a protest. No, these agents had a machete thrown at them.
Nobody saw the headline and brought their hot dogs.
Right. It's like a block. Well, that's what because the rioters called it during CHOP a block party.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's why Mayor Jenny Durkan was saying, oh, during the day, it's just a block party out there, right, and vendors and people eating hot dogs and pizza. And it could be a new summer of love. So how irresponsible of the media, given the assaults on federal agents and the fact that this rioting has been happening for days on end, to use the language of the enemy, frankly, and say, ICE block party, because doesn't that sound nice? Mm-hmm. That's insane. So that'll infuriate you, but I have something that will bring you joy, and it is a rioter being tased in the back and face planting on the concrete.
What are you going to tase him for? What the f*** are you going to tase him for?
Well,
oh my God! Are you f***ing serious?
Oh my god.
I'm sorry,
oh my god.
I'm gonna laugh at this.
Oh my god. Oh my god! Holy f***!
What the f***? You just kicked her! What the f***? What the f***? What the f***? What the f***?
Really upset. That person brandished a weapon, is what ICE says. And so they tased him, her, we'll figure that out in a moment, tased him. And they face planted. And after everything Antifa has done to me and has done to peace and dignity and law and order, I'm sorry. Yes, I'm going to laugh. I know the show is called Undivided, but yes, I found that absolutely hilarious. And FAFO, I'm just, I don't even care anymore. Like you, and they act like, oh, anytime there's any response from the police, from federal agents toward their criminal conduct, they act like, how dare you? How dare you do that? How dare you respond to our violence with violence? We're the only ones allowed to commit violent acts because they've been conditioned. Because in places like Seattle, Portland, LA, they have been allowed to commit violent acts. They've been allowed to light things on fire, to vandalize things, to hurt police officers, to hurt journalists with little to no repercussions. So of course, when the federal government under Donald Trump comes in and absolutely creates a smoke show for them and is tasing them as they run away, then they're like, oh my God, all of a sudden there are consequences and we can't possibly fathom that we would actually get in trouble for some of these things. And here's the rioters chanting. So they spread a lie online and it was intentional. It was absolutely intentional. They spread a lie online that these ICE agents killed a peaceful protester who was at the block party, killed him. Here's that video.
Murderers! Cops! Pigs! Murderers! Cops! Pigs! Murderers!
As the ambulance
cops,
goes away.
Pigs! Murderers!
Yeah, the rioter's not dead. The rioter is very much alive and is severely messed up in the face by bruising. I don't mean just generally speaking. Christopher M. Hudson is that rioter's name, aka Julie Michaela Winters. So it's a man pretending to be a woman. Here's some images. Why are you laughing, Nicole?
Can you imagine if you showed up for a date with that person thinking it's the person on the left and you see the person on the right?
What do you mean? It is the person on the left. Yeah. You wouldn't look great if you got tased in the back and face planted too.
I'm not an online dater. I need you to be, but I just can't.
You know what I never understood? And I'll just be honest. God, I'm mean today. I don't even care because I hate Antifa so much. I feel like our viewers and listeners will understand. You know what I never understood? The whole like super filter thing.
I know.
Because unless you're going to live a completely online life, people are always going to see you in person and be like, huh, because they're so used to seeing these highly filtered images of you online. So yeah, imagine if Julie Michaela Winters had a date and then you show up and it's Christopher Hudson.
Here's some more.
Well, the whole black and blue face planted. Like, well, Christopher, you shouldn't have been there, you know, doing what you were doing, and you wouldn't have got a taser to the back and face planted on your face and then rolled into a bike lane. The only thing that would have made that video better is if a bike then came by at that exact moment.
Right. No. I think that part of the filtered thing is that people need compliments more than they've ever needed. I mean, everybody likes a compliment, and now I think people need it. So even if it's just online and not in person, that's a great picture. They just
look at that picture on the right. Look at that picture on the right.
Like the just put the trans thing aside.
Put the trans thing aside. This isn't even about poking fun at a trans person. Mm-hmm. I don't care. That looks like an adult. If you want to be trans and dress like that, that's fine. But look at that picture on the right.
It's AI. It's not even a real photo.
That's insane.
I keep seeing people online asking, like, which picture should I use for my business my headshot? And I'm like, no, those are not you.
I always send you, I was like, can you even identify this person? I've said this to you before. I was like, hey, do you know who this is? And it's someone we both know very well.
Yes.
I've done this multiple times. Mm-hmm. And you'd be like, I have no idea who that is. I'm like, it's so-and-so. Uh-huh. But they were like using these AI-generated images that don't look like anything like them. So I don't know. So anyway, it's not a block party. In all seriousness, it's not a block party what's happening in Portland. Although it looks like federal agents were having quite a bit of fun eventually when they were allowed to unleash on the rioters who'd been outside their facility for days and days on end. And Christopher Hudson is not dead, despite the fact that Antifa is actively spreading that lie online because they want other people to come and join in. They want to create more anger and hostility toward ICE and federal agents and spin this narrative that they killed a peaceful demonstrator when that's not what it was at all. So I wish you quick healing and a quick recovery, Christopher Hudson, so you can have your day in court.
Mr. Trump, where are you?
Can you also imagine? I'm sorry. No, I'm not going to say it because that's just mean. I got to be nice. I got to be nice.
Undivided, Brandy.
Sure.
Undivided.
Yeah, I'm going to be nice. I'm not going to say it. All right, coming up next, we're going to do some serious stuff, so I do have to reset it. Some horrifying numbers are out about the number of children in the care of the state of Washington who are dying after being exposed to fentanyl. Truly alarming, not surprising, because we've known that this is happening, and I don't know when state leaders are going to start to listen. First, you've heard of DOGE, obviously, Department of Government Efficiency. Have you heard of the Department of Retirement Efficiency? No? Well, that's because we made it up. But it sounds cool. And our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital is basically the Department of Retirement Efficiency, because they want to make sure, one, of course, that you, your hard-earned retirement and the dreams and ambitions that you have for retirement, that you're going to be able to achieve that goal. But they also want to make sure that your retirement portfolio is properly protected against risk. I mean, in today's climate, man, there's like a different major global news story every other day. And so you just have to make sure that the diversification and all of that is protecting your hard-earned retirement against unnecessary risk. Risk is always part of the equation, of course. But Zach and his team will show you, they'll do a full reveal of how Bulwark is looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. And so they'll tell you kind of their process and stuff. But at very simplest level, just look at it as a second opinion. We get second opinions on all sorts of things. And so your retirement portfolio, one of the most important things that you are doing for your future, why not get a second opinion on that as well? Don't put it off. Go to knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. I saw somebody in the comments say, stop it, Brandy, I'm going to pee my pants. Well, hold it, because we're going to talk about urine coming up. Yes, very highbrow show today, highbrow. First, so we've talked a lot on the show about the Keeping Families Together Act, which was a sham. It was sold as a complete lie told to lawmakers. And lawmakers on both sides of the aisle are complicit. This was passed by Democrats and Republicans several years ago. And the idea of the Keeping Families Together Act, as it was sold, was like, hey, we're going to do more to try to get parents who've suffered with drug addiction, you know, back in their children's lives. But what it turned into is setting this really high bar for removing a child from a home where there's active substance abuse. It turned into a situation where judges, based on the law, were deciding that a parent using fentanyl, the deadliest street drug that's out there right now, around a child was not imminent harm. So they didn't have to be taken away, even temporarily, because we're going to keep families together because it feels really good. And what has the result been? Well, kids have been ingesting fentanyl. Many of them have been dying. Some of them have been close to dying. We've told stories. We've had parents sitting here who that happened to their two-year-old when they went for a visitation at the father's house. And DCYF's reaction to all of that so far has been, okay, we're going to do more. We're going to do more. And our big, bright, genius idea is we are going to, at no cost, provide these drug-addicted parents with a free lockbox. So they literally went on a King 5 news interview with a lockbox and displayed it like this was the smartest idea anyone's ever had to protect kids from drug abusing parents. Is for the state to just, no, don't stop using drugs. We're not going to take the child out of the home. We're going to give this drug addicted parent a lockbox and believe that they'll have the presence of mind to lock up their fentanyl and their used needles, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Just insane stuff. And while they dick around with all of that and act like this is a righteous thing to do, kids are dying. And the numbers prove that out. This from Center Square. WADCYF reveals alarming child death, near-death numbers in the first quarter of 2025. So this is just numbers, and this is going to become important when we get into the actual facts and figures here. This is just the first quarter of this year. So we obviously are going to have, I think, a continuing trend upward. A little bit from this article. Last week, DCYF held a meeting with key staff and officials to discuss the concerning and drastic, that's a quote, increase with 54% of the child fatalities due to opioids. The disturbing numbers following troubling statistics from 2023 and 2024, when a total of 37 children under state supervision were killed either by drug exposure, abuse and neglect, or other incidents, including fire or being left in a hot car. Of the 37 deaths, fentanyl was the leading cause of death for children under DCYF care in 2023 and 2024. According to information provided in last week's briefing from DCYF and shared with the Center Square, there were 27 fatal and near-fatal child incidents in the first 3 months of 2025, compared to 9 in the first 3 months of 2024. Threefold increase. in just 3 months. 7 of the incidents were fatal, 20 were near fatal, and 16 involved children from birth to age 3. The last figure is an increase from 6 such incidents in the first quarter of 2024. So 16 in the first 3 months of this year involved babies, like newborns up to age 3. And last year, comparative period of time, there were 6 of those incidents. So dramatic increases. And these things are happening to the most helpless, tiny babies and infants. And when they say these are children under the care of DCYF, that doesn't mean that these are kids who've been placed in foster care by DCYF. These are children who have some sort of active monitoring plan, parenting thing that the state is part of. So some of these are the victims, really, of the Keeping Families Together Act, where, okay, you get to keep your kid even though you're actively abusing fentanyl in the home. We'll give you a lockbox. Your child is still technically in the care of DCYF, so to speak. But you get to see this child is spending time, sometimes alone, with a drug-addicted parent abusing the deadliest street drug there is. And we're somehow shocked that in the years since the Keeping Families Together Act went into effect, that deaths and near deaths have skyrocketed. Nobody with a brain is shocked by that. And that tells you that they really do care. They care more about the ideology of decriminalizing and destigmatizing drug abuse than they do about children dying. They would rather destigmatize drug abuse than save the lives of little babies. How else do you look at that? How else do you look at that? Because the numbers are clear. The outcome is clear. And they're okay with it. The Democrats in Olympia are okay with it. They've had multiple opportunities. And there are some who sided with Republicans, like, hey, we need to fix this, but not enough. So they're okay with babies dying as long as they don't have to give up their misguided ideology about hard drugs. How disgusting is that? And the victims are tiny babies who can't speak for themselves. Absolutely outrageous. Here's some of the numbers, again, posted by the Center Square. So this is DCYF fatalities, and you can see that this is a steady increase. I believe Keeping Families Together was passed in 2021. I could be wrong about that, but I think it was 2021. And so then you're seeing how quickly things started to escalate from there. So in 2020, there were 10 fatalities all year. Now, and then it went to 14, 17, 17, 20 in 2024. So double, the number of fatalities doubled in just 4 years. And now we're on track to have 28 if the current number from Q1 holds. 28, and that's not just a number. That is, those are children. Vulnerable children, babies, teenagers who are under the care of the state of Washington. And the state of Washington is not caring for them. Not in the slightest. 20 near fatalities in the first quarter of 2025? So if that holds, there'd be 80? And you compare that to 18 in all of 2020, and we don't think there's a problem here? For the love of God, a little more from this. Number of critical incidents for Q1 of calendar year 2025 has tripled over the same period for last year. 9 in the first quarter, 54% of those were fentanyl-related, 46% non-fentanyl-related. Not a surprise there either. I mean, fentanyl can kill an adult in such small numbers. So if a child comes into contact with fentanyl, the likelihood of death is pretty high. And then, as we said previously, a lot of these are children from birth to age 3. Number of opioid-related DCYF reviewable critical incidents involving children age 3 or younger, 5 in the first quarter of 2024 versus 14 in the first quarter of this year. Absolutely outrageous. So what are you going to do about it? That's the question, right? What are you going to do about it? And at the same time, on Sundays with Subscribers this week, we have State Representative Michelle Caldier, and we're talking about this bizarre decision to close this facility that's been supported by a lot of conservatives, and I tend to think that that might be part of the reason, but to close this facility that takes care of drug-addicted babies. And I tend to think that they're doing it because it doesn't coddle the drug-addicted parents as much as Democrats want them to. So they're literally willing. And I would be, any of them who support the Keeping Families Together Act still, I invite you into the studio to have a conversation about it. Because as far as I'm concerned, I truly mean this, you are okay with babies dying if it means that you don't have to go backward on your ideology and what you've pushed with the on the drug front, the legalization of drugs, etc. So if you're a Democrat and you support the Keeping Families Together Act and you think that's an unfair characterization, come in the studio and let's talk about it. Because all I want to do is save the lives of kids. What do you want to do? What's your goal? What do you think is the number one priority? I mean, Representative Roger Goodman, you'll remember the interview that he did on the news where he was talking about, oh, we don't want to increase penalties for parents when their kid gets a hold of their drugs and dies, because then we're criminalizing drug use. So you don't want to penalize them when they killed their kid? It's really unhinged, far, far left radical stuff. But unfortunately, like, we're being run by a bunch of radicals, and that seems to be the predominant viewpoint of Democrats in Olympia. It's wild to me. I mean, there's really no shame. There is nothing and no one they won't sacrifice in the name of their far left ideology and in normalizing substance abuse. Absolutely crazy. All right, coming up next in our segment, Unbelievable. It's a mystery, really. Jugs of urine just showing up on people's lawns. And, you know, these residents in these deep blue areas, they're so mad about it. This is disgusting. But they seem totally perplexed as to what's happening here and what the underlying cause might be. We'll talk about it in a double dose of Unbelievable coming up next. First, for a couple years now, I've talked about my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program. In fact, I just had someone in the other day and they're like, Brandy, you look so great. What have you been doing? And I said, Eastside Weight Loss Clinic. In my first 60 days on the program, I lost 30 pounds. And that was like two and a half years ago. And I've been able to lose even more weight since then. I think I'm down to 46 pounds total now. I feel fantastic. And if you've ever struggled with your weight and just keeping a consistent weight, being able to have a program that works for you, that fits into your life, and just feeling good and confident. I mean, there's really just, it is the best feeling in the world. So not every weight loss program is right for every person. So I'm not saying this one's going to be right for you, but the only way you can find out, schedule a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team at eastsideweightlossclinic.com. eastsideweightlossclinic.com. Ask all the questions that you have, go over it, then you can decide if it's something that you want to commit to. Difficult first 60 days, but if you can commit to it, a lot of patients see 20 to 30 pounds in weight loss in those first 60 days, which is awesome. All right, we have a urine bottle mystery on our hands. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Okay, let's see if we can get to the bottom of this mystery, shall we? KGW8 out of Portland, headline. I'm not touching that. Neighbors in Northeast Portland deal with bottles of urine left near homes. Neighbors have been dealing with the problem for months and say getting help disposing of the human waste is challenging. Okay. So I see that and immediately think, well, obviously homelessness, right? It's probably people living in tents, or more likely maybe some of the derelict RVs that aren't working, aren't functioning properly. So they're peeing. Actually, can you bring that photo back up, Nicole? The look on your face is hilarious. That whoever left those bottles needs to go to an emergency room immediately. Because that is you have a hydration problem there, but something else. Something's not being filtered out. Nicole's like, stop it. Take it down. Don't make me. Oh, just wait. I'm going to make you gag even more. All right. So, you know, obviously this is probably, well, no, it is homeless people, right? You don't have a home and you're choosing to pee in jugs and leave them outside other people's homes.
And
you just don't.
I mean, you have a mental health problem when you
choose
to.
There's a lot going on there.
Yeah.
Yes.
Choose to do this.
Certainly this news article is going to bring up the homeless crisis that Portland's dealing with in some capacity, right? Let's read on, shall we? So they talked to a few residents, and this is the residents' quote. Somebody said, take it into the house and put it down the drain. She said, I'm not touching that. Neighbors like Matt Anglin said they've been noticing the pee-filled bottles in their neighborhood a lot recently. I asked Jean, his neighbor, if she got pee bottled. It seems problematic because nobody wants to deal with a bunch of someone else's pee. So they call it getting pee bottled. Hey, Jean, it's Matt here. Did you get pee bottled today? I got pee bottled. All right, let's move on. So they reached out, these residents who have these pee bottles showing up on their lawn. They've been asking the Metro, which in Portland is their garbage service, basically, what they should do. KGW reached out to Metro for guidance on getting help disposing of the urine. Gia Balash, who's the media liaison for Metro Garbage and Recycling, said this. It's such a gross, unfortunate situation, and there's not a good answer, and that's the problem. Balazs said in certain cases, Metro's RID patrol will remove garbage dumped on public property. In Jean's case, the urine bottles were left in the public right-of-way, so she submitted a report online. Balazs looked into Jean's case and said their crews would be responding to remove the urine bottles. She said removing urine bottles left on private property, however, is the property owner's responsibility. Quote, unfortunately, the best thing we can tell people to do is to put on gloves and dump the urine in the yard or toilet. Yeah, that is what Metro Garbage and Recycling advised in this news article homeowners to do. Now, if it's left on the public right of way, they'll come remove it.
Why don't you just move it over?
But if it's a, right, yes. Yeah. But if it's a few feet in on your property, they literally think that you should put on gloves and dump the urine, gallons of it, in your yard or take it inside and dump it in your toilet. This is typical. Not our problem. It's your problem. So we haven't gotten to anything yet on the homeless issue, right? Mm-hmm. Clearly a homeless issue. Let's keep reading because obviously that has to be in here, right? Neighbor Bruce Porter is trying to understand why someone's leaving the urine containers there. This is a bigger thing. This is not just random. It's happening all over, Porter said. You can't carry 6-gallon jugs of waste without having a purpose to it. Portland Police Sergeant Kevin Allen said they've been hearing anecdotal reports of errant urine-filled bottles dating back to September. We'd ask that folks living in this area be vigilant and check their home security cameras for anything suspicious. You guys, nowhere in this article, which was republished in Seattle by King 5 News, nowhere does it mention homeless people. RVs, derelict RVs, nowhere does it mention the homeless crisis. The crisis of people living outdoors, the people who wouldn't have a bathroom to go in. And don't even get me started on where their feces is ending up. Because they're not, they're just leaving the urine-filled bottles. They're not leaving packages of other things. So nowhere, this is the news. Nowhere, the news has lost its mind. We don't need to see, I don't need to see video to prove to me that it's a homeless person leaving the pee jugs there. It's common sense. Just like I don't need a meteorologist to tell me it's raining if I can look outside and see it's raining. I don't need someone else to confirm that for me. So either they're all being willfully ignorant, including, by the way, the residents in a deep blue area that probably voted for the policies that have led to the homeless crisis, that are leading to people who are leaving really deep orange colored urine jugs outside on the front lawn. And in that case, I don't feel bad for these people. They're all mystified by it. And why wouldn't they be mystified? Because the media is not even bringing it up. And if that's what they consume to get their information, then I guess we're all just mystified and we can't put two and two together. And so now these people who will probably go on to vote for Democrats and progressives, etc., are left with the task of having to put gloves on, unscrew the urine lid bottles and dump it in their own yards. Sorry, Nicole.
Yeah. And
you're really grossed out today.
And tell me it's not a homeless. Homelessness is not a mental health problem. Tell me it's just down on their luck.
Right.
And decided to pee in bottles and put it in other people's yards. Yeah. Not a
also,
mental
just
health,
pee in
health
the,
problem.
Mm-mm. Just do what they do in downtown Seattle. They just pee on the walls.
I'm guessing they don't want it in their own tents. That would be their own yard. They don't want to pee in their own yard.
Yeah, well, if they're in like a tent city type thing and they don't want to get out, where am I going to go pee out? So they just pee in the bottles when it's full. They just mosey on down and they dump it in somebody's front yard.
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't a long haul trucker who's decided to, and they pee in bottles, right? They do. So it's not a long haul trucker who said, hey, I'm going to collect 6 gallons of my urine, and then I'm going to drive into the center of a major city, and I'm just going to leave it in someone's front yard. There's no other explanation for it. So, Portlanders, if you're upset about getting, what did that guy call it? Pee bottled, vote different. That's my advice to you. All right, let's get to a double dose of, we're done with the urine pictures, Nicole. You can recover
now. Thank
you. Let's get to a double dose of unbelievable. My advice would be to take those pee bottles down to City Hall and you'll leave them at City Hall. Leave them right at the entrance to City Hall. That's what I would do with them. All right. I want to talk about this because it's going to actually lead into our next segment. This is another example of, I actually didn't You might have to go, you might have to read in there and see if they brought up the tab issue.
So they kind of do. They go, they,
but vaguely, right?
They go to a Reddit post of like, I'm taxed too much, so I'm not paying this. So they don't go into deep, you know, Tim Iman territory, but they definitely go into the Reddit post.
Yeah. So Fox 13 has this article. It's another one of these, we know why this is happening. It's not because people are poor or they're just feeling the burden. And I believe, you know, people are feeling the burden of being overtaxed. But they're making a point here. They're choosing to make a point. The headline, report states 500,000 Washington drivers have expired car tabs. And again, you and I, we see that and we're like, immediately know why. We don't need an explanation. We immediately know why, because we have a brain and we can think for ourselves. The article says about 600,000 Washington drivers are on the roads illegally, according to Carfax, a vehicle history database. Recent data from Carfax claims 593,000 people are driving with expired tabs. If these numbers are accurate, it would cost Washington $25.6 million, so in revenue they don't get in. That is the lowest possible value using the state's base fee, $43.25 for tabs. So at the low end, they'd be out $25 million in revenue. Of course, we know that it's probably much, much,
it's
much
probably all the
than
people
that
on along the Sound Transit
right,
line.
Who are going to pay that? It says, quote, we don't know how many vehicles are driving on Washington roads with expired registrations, and that's because there are a variety of reasons people don't renew. Perhaps they sold vehicles, they've moved out of states, their car was totaled, maybe they decided to keep the car garaged for several years, said a representative with the Department of Licensing. We simply don't know, and we don't ask why, and we don't track them down. We only track active registrations. Well, we know why. It's because the people of the state had voted time and time again for $30 car tabs, and Democrats in Olympia and their friends at all the law firms sue and get it thrown out. And people are sick of it. You know how many people have told me, I haven't paid my car tabs in 2 years? And we even heard from that one person who said they got pulled over for having expired tabs. This was like maybe around the time of the pandemic. And they told the officer, I'm not paying the car tabs because I voted for $30 car tabs multiple times and it keeps getting thrown out. And they didn't get a ticket for it. Because the trooper's like, yeah, well, I can't understand that. So it's just ridiculous, this idea that, oh my gosh, it's such a mystery. Why are half, and who, I mean, what sucks about it is we're all going to pay that cost. When they have almost 600,000 people who aren't paying their car tabs and they've already allotted and planned for that revenue and the what they're going to use it on, ultimately, it just is going to turn into new taxes on us in some other form or fashion.
It already has.
Yeah. And that's probably included in the $9.5 billion. Like, oh, we're getting less money, less revenue through car tabs than we expected. So that's part of our budget shortfall. So now we have to go in and tax people in other ways. Maybe you should have given us the $30 car tabs, because I'll tell you what, state of Washington and Democrats, it would be better to get $30 from a driver than no dollars from a driver, because right now that's happening quite a bit. All right. Coming up next, speaking of that, so this has become a pattern. Washington voters vote for something, and then Democrats don't like it, so they fight it tooth and nail in the courts to get it thrown out. We are still going through that battle with the fight to protect natural gas in our homes and businesses. So we thought it would be a good day to catch you up on where that legal battle is at. First, I've encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge. Make some time. Make that, put on your to-do list this weekend to call First Mark Insurance and schedule time to take the First Mark Challenge. It doesn't take a lot of time. I would say maybe half hour to an hour of a commitment, but you could save thousands of dollars on the back end. So I would say that is time well worth it. Jacob Miller, an undivided listener and viewer, said he and his wife took the First Mark Challenge. They are now saving $600 on their home and around $2,000 a year for their family's cars. He says First Mark was very easy and honest, very honest and easy to work with. My wife even knew our agent's mother from the past. Isn't that nice? Because we're a family. It's the First Mark family. I'm a member of it. My husband, obviously. Nicole's a member of it. Undivided is even a member of the First Mark family. Now, Jacob Miller and his wife are members of the First Mark family, and there's so many others as well, and that's because First Mark is an exceptional service, and it doesn't cost you a dime. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. Okay, so we saw that story on the car tabs issue, and it reminded us to check in on what's happening with the gas ban issue. So as you know, Democrats in Olympia, they decided to, in a very sneaky roundabout way, start the process of banning natural gas. Like, hey, you're building a new home? Nope, it's got to be electrified. And eventually they're going to get to the point where they're going to allow PSE to cut off your natural gas, and then you'll be on the hook to the tune of like $40,000 on average to electrify your home. So Let's Go Washington stepped in. This was one of the initiatives they decided to run with a lot of help from the Building Industry Association of Washington. They went out, they collected enough signatures in like a month and a half, got it on the ballot for voters in November, and voters passed the initiative. Voters decided, no, I want energy choice. I want the ability to have natural gas in my home or in my business. And so immediately when that happened, Governor Jay Inslee said, we're going to fight this in court. We think it's unconstitutional. He got a sweetheart judge in King County who he appointed. He went to court personally, Governor Inslee did, even though he wasn't governor at the time. This was like this year after he was out. He was out of office and he still went. And it was like, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And a King County judge ruled that the initiative was unconstitutional. So, of course, Let's Go Washington, BIAW, they weren't going to sit there and do nothing about it. So this has now all been caught up in the courts. We asked Greg Lane, the executive vice president of the Building Industry Association of Washington, to come on the show today and update us. Greg Lane, welcome back to Undivided.
It's great to be with you again, Brandy. Good to see you.
I keep getting asked by viewers and listeners if we would give them an update on where the gas ban drama stands.
Yeah.
I think they're all so tired of voting for things that they never get, or in this case, voting against something. So what's the status?
Yeah, I think that's actually, I have members asking me all the time too, and it doesn't get a whole lot of attention. And the process now, you know, the court process is drawn out so much. It doesn't get a whole lot of attention from the media. So I really appreciate you staying up on top of it for us. So we have filed, we did in late May, May 27th, for a direct review appeal to the state Supreme Court. This is an appeal of the ruling, if you remember, by the King County Superior Court Judge Sandra Woodland, we had the hearing in front of her, which she ruled from the bench that the initiative was unconstitutional back on March 21st. And then lo and behold, she took 7 weeks almost to actually file the order, which we had to have in place in order to file the appeal to the Supreme Court. So it was, and you know, so they've been drawing this process out as long as possible, which is really frustrating. And it prevented us from being able to get in front of the Supreme Court before they take their summer recess, which happens in July and August. So now we're waiting to hear back from the Supreme Court as to when the hearing will be, but it's not going to be until the fall.
So you had a lot of concerns last time you came on after Judge Woodland made her initial ruling. You know, one, your suspicions. I mean, Jay Inslee was in the room. He appointed her. It seemed like there was a wink, wink, nudge, nudge. So, you know, given that, do you think that that was an intentional delay?
I believe it was. It certainly was highly unusual. Typically, or final orders, especially when a judge does a ruling like she did, where she had 6 pages that she read. I mean, she'd written out the order. What she filed as the final order was really insignificantly different from what her oral ruling was from the bench. So it's, to me, that's highly suspicious. We really, as we discussed before, did not feel like we got a fair and unbiased hearing in front of that judge who was appointed by Jay Inslee, and clearly, her ideology, I think, played a clear role in her decision. And I don't think she really listened to our arguments. She bought everything that the plaintiffs said. And also, you know, she was aware that regardless of what she ruled, this case was going to end up at the Supreme Court. So, you know, she really, I don't know, I think was pandering a bit to, you know, her base, and certainly the governor who appointed her in this ruling, because she knew regardless of whatever the ruling was, it was going to get appealed, and it was almost kind of a free opportunity for her to rule however she wanted. And again, I just don't feel like we had a fair look at what those issues were being raised. I'm hopeful. I really hope that we'll get a more fair and unbiased hearing when we get in front of the Supreme Court this fall.
Are you, though? I don't know. Maybe I'm.
I know.
Is that a little Pollyannish? Because when you look at like people who got their seats because of Jay Inslee and all this, I mean, I don't really see a substantial difference ideologically on the state Supreme Court.
I do think ideologically, when you compare to the Superior Court in King County, it's a little further closer to the center. But you're right. I mean, the justices are still extremely liberal on this issue. However, they do, unlike the Superior Court, they will pay attention to precedent much more closely, which our arguments rely on a great deal, the precedent of previous decisions on the court by the court. And so we feel like we certainly will have a better shot. I again, going in, we know it's probably leaning against us, but we think we've got a pretty good shot, or at least an equal shot at five or six of the justices. There's three or four that probably we don't have a chance to get, but we only need five. And so we're going to go in and make the arguments. And we have a number of our partners lined up to put in amicus briefs in supporting of our arguments. And so we're going to aggressively try and defend it. And we're working closely with the Attorney General's office, who is the lead defendant. And I know there's suspicions around that as well. But the attorney that we've been working with out of the Solicitor General's office and the AG's office has been aggressively defending the state law, the initiative, and working very closely with our outside counsel. So we've been pleased with their efforts.
So I guess for people watching, I mean, what's the status? Like, let's say you're thinking about building a new house. I mean,
Yeah.
would you tell them don't put gas in it? Don't put gas, don't have a gas
Well,
hookup?
that's the problem. Right now, as of the King County ruling, House Bill 1589 and the energy codes for all new construction, commercial and residential, ban natural gas. So if you are building a new home or a new commercial structure, you are prohibited from using natural gas, or you are strongly penalized if you do choose to use natural gas, which was our argument for the reason why this was basically a natural gas ban on the energy codes, because it's so restrictive and so penalizing that there's no way that people would choose to do it. It's so cost prohibitive. So right now, as of now, the law is the current energy code bans natural gas, and 1589, which Initiative 2066 overturned. That was the bill passed by the legislature in 2024 that starts the banning of natural gas to existing customers. That law is now in place as well, which is, and again, getting to the point why the opponents, why those who want to ban natural gas are trying to push this process along as slow as possible so that the regulatory agencies that are supposed to implement those policies can start that process. And they are aggressively advocating to those agencies to start that process. We're trying to ask them hold off until we get a final ruling on the legality of the initiative before they move forward.
Yeah, what a mess. And people are so sick of this. I mean, we have this story on the show today. There's like 500,000 Washingtonians whose car tabs aren't up to date. And they're like, why is that? Why do you think it is? It's because they've asked for it a million times. You didn't give it to them. And now they're just over it. I don't think it's as easy for home builders to just say, we're not going to do that. You can't really do that, right? So it's so
We cannot.
frustrating. So the earliest we'll have a decision again is when?
Well, the earliest that we'll have a hearing is September. We're hoping in September or by early October. And then it takes a few months for the court to actually issue an opinion. So, that could be anywhere between 3 to 6 months. Sometimes this court's taken up to a year. I really hope and anticipate that they wouldn't take that long, but I would guess we probably won't have an actual ruling until the first part of 2026, over a year after the voters of the state passed the initiative. It's really frustrating that it takes that long to get through the process, but that's what we're expecting in terms of a timeline.
Yeah, just one thing quick, because we've seen the Trump administration came out and said, hey, we're going to intervene when there's policies that impact America's energy independence. And we saw what they did with the EV situation, which I think was positive, and it was bipartisan. Congress passed that on a bipartisan basis. So is this something that the president could intervene in?
This is absolutely. So there are a couple things at the federal level that we've been working on in the meantime while we're still pursuing this case. The first one, as you mentioned, is that the president issued the executive order in early April. It was April 8th, I believe, on energy independence. So we, along with our coalition of other associations, business organizations, sent a letter to the Department of Justice asking that Washington's policies, both the Energy Code and House Bill 1589, be made a high priority by the Department of Justice, because we think it certainly fits the definition that the executive order of policies at states that increase energy costs for consumers and put the nation's energy security at risk. So meets that definition. And then in Congress, there is a piece of legislation that would be a federal national ban the ban on, so it would ban banning of natural gas. This is the Energy Choice Act. Ours was the Energy Choice Initiative. This is the Energy Choice Act. It was introduced by a congressman from New York, and has a number of co-sponsors, including Dan Newhouse from Washington. It was introduced in both the House and the Senate, and we're told is a high priority of the House Republican Conference back in D.C. So if that legislation passed, that also would supersede the state ban here. So we're working really hard at the national level to try and get that done while we're still pursuing protecting I-2066. So this fight isn't over. We're, battling on a number of fronts to try and protect natural gas service for everybody in Washington State.
Love that, man. If not,
Yeah.
poor Jay Inslee, if Donald Trump came in and
Oh,
upended the
yes.
CCA and the gas ban and the EV mandates. But again, there is bipartisan opposition to some of these policies. I think it was
Absolutely.
Congresswoman Marie Glusenkamp-Perez down in the third who voted with Republicans on the EV issue. So, it's common sense stuff. And the cost driver here for people who are already like on razor thin margins with their family budget, I think is a big motivator for that. So, Greg, thanks for continuing to fight on these things. Update us on both fronts, okay? I want to know if you guys hear back anything meaningful from the Trump administration on some of this stuff.
Yes.
And then I guess we'll talk to you again in the fall when the state Supreme Court takes this one up. But I'm sure we'll chat before then, but we appreciate it.
Great to be with you, and yes, we'll keep you updated and your viewers. Appreciate it.
Once again, we got to rely on Donald Trump to bail us out of some absolute policy disaster. Can't even be the voters of the state who say, "No, I want natural gas." And Democrats say, "No, you really don't. We're going to sue you over that." And what's also crazy is like Jay Inslee, the former governor, he's the one who's pushing and leading this effort to overturn the initiative. Right. And we're supposed to believe, and BIAW sounds very confident. I get it. They have to work with these individuals. We have to believe that Nick Brown, the attorney general, who was the legal counsel for Jay Inslee while Jay Inslee was governor, who didn't support the initiative, we're supposed to believe that he's going to give it the best defense possible. Call me suspicious. But I don't know if that's the case. All right, that segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends at the Rental Housing Association of Washington. If you are a small to mid-sized landlord, become a member of RHA today. They can help you navigate this insane environment. And yes, speaking of natural gas, that is an issue that impacts landlords as well. If you're going to have to pay to electrify the unit that you rent out, rhawa.org, rhawa.org. Okay. All right. What are we going into here? National news? I got confused. What happened to that one? Oh, I thought we were going into national news and I was going to talk about this LA County thing. Gosh, I'm confused. All right, in some national news, an LA County city, the city of Bell Gardens, has announced that it is canceling 4th of July. 4th of July is canceled. Why? Well, because they're worried about immigration enforcement efforts happening. It says, out of an abundance of caution regarding concerns for resident safety over federal immigration enforcement activities, the city of Bell Gardens will be canceling the scheduled events between June 24th and July 10th. Gosh, that's not even just 4th of July. That's like 2 full weeks of festivities canceled. It says, including the Independence Day celebration, all other summer programming, such as summer day camp, sports, etc., will continue as normal unless individually canceled as necessary. Absolute definition of virtue signaling. Because here's the thing. If you're an illegal immigrant, illegal alien, and you're concerned about ICE, you're just not going to come to the, you're not going to come out. But this idea that ICE is just going to show up, let's work this through in our minds. What do you think ICE is going to do? They're just going to show up at a 4th of July parade and look for people with brown skin and demand their paperwork. That's not what they're going to do. That's not what they have been doing. And so it's just this insane, it's not just virtue signaling, it's about instilling fear. These progressive governments want people to be afraid. They want, because then people are afraid of Donald Trump. So even if there's no risk to them, They want them to be afraid and think and get it in their mind that Donald Trump will literally send immigration agents out to a 4th of July celebration to round up people who are brown. Because the only way they maintain control over you and keep getting your votes is if you're so fearful and scared of the alternative and you're the one trying to protect them by canceling a 4th of July celebration. Just crazy stuff. All right. In sane news on the immigration front, we have to go all the way over to Florida for our weekly segment. And I'm sure you've heard about this by now. We've been dying to talk about it all week. The soon-to-be alligator Alcatraz in the middle of the Florida Everglades, where they're going to house illegal aliens awaiting deportation. Let's talk about it in Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, alligator Alcatraz. You already knew that's what we're talking about today.
I already knew it.
Man, is that behind you? Is that, you could put that head on the gate to alligator Alcatraz just to let them know what awaits if they try to escape.
Like a gargoyle, but
yes,
a gator.
Yes, 100%. So we'll listen to what Governor Ron DeSantis had to say about this. Place to house illegals while they're awaiting deportation. And then we'll talk about it more on the back end.
We can't have every illegal housed in our jails because we actually have non-illegals who need to be housed there when they commit crimes too. So if you're doing the immigration enforcement and you're putting people, and there is a process to it, so they have to go. So if they're temporarily held, then they can be repatriated their home country. That takes burdens away from the state of Florida and for Florida residents. But this has been an airport there that I think our goal is, if we do buy it, we will probably eventually eliminate it and try to, you know, let the Everglades grow over it. But it's been there for a while and it's been used. And so we had a request from the federal government to do it. And so alligator Alcatraz it is.
There's so much about this. First of all, I love the grasping for straws for, like, how are we going to, you know, paint this as a horrible, awful thing? And they're saying it's inhumane. But look, the alligators are only a problem if you try to escape. So it's not like the alligators are going to be housed with the illegal aliens. So all these lefties saying this is inhumane, if they're surrounded by alligators, are you suggesting they're going to try to escape?
Yeah, and I don't think it's any more inhumane than shoving them in our already overpopulated prison system within the city. I mean, I'd rather be out in the fresh air, to be honest with you, but it's easy for me to say that.
Although,
and also they're acting like they're just gonna be like walking alligators around on leashes like they're canine dogs or something. It's not that serious.
Although I can see, like, when you get the fences up, obviously, because you're gonna have to have, the alligators aren't the only means by which they're gonna try to keep these people in place. It's not Alcatraz in the sense that they'd have to jump into this water, and it wasn't like they were roaming free on Alcatraz. They were still within a secure facility, right? I can, however, see, given the amount of alligators in that area, like the fence up, the gate, and then you just have the alligators waiting for them, just like, try me, bro.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you do see them on the roads when you start driving out on 8th Street, which is where this is located. This is about 40 miles west of Miami in Big Cypress National Preserve. It's a beautiful area. And this was actually, this airport project started in the late 60s. It was meant to be one of the biggest airports, like five times the size of JFK. And it got shut down in the early 70s because of, like, environmental concerns. So they only really got one runway put in. But the runway they have put in is over 2 miles long.
Wow.
And that's still there. So you have a lot of the tarmac. There's a lot of concrete slabs for parking. There's already a lot of, like, that kind of foundation in place for them to bring in whatever temporary infrastructure they're planning to bring in to just utilize a space that's not being utilized right
now. Yeah, because that's the other argument from people who don't like it, because they're just trying to find things, is the environmental thing. They already paved paradise and put up a parking lot. Like, it was already there. And what DeSantis is saying, you know, after we're done with this use of it, we'll just let it kind of go back to nature, which is fine. And it sounds like nothing they're building right now, because they've already started, is going to be permanent. Like, these are temporary sort of structures, right?
Yeah, it's a lot of trailers and tents. It looks much nicer than Fire Festival. I saw some pictures of it. So I'm like, this isn't going to be so bad. But I'm also kind of curious if they're going to utilize that runway to run flights out when they repatriatize people to their own countries. Is it repatriate?
Repatriate, I think. I like repatriate ties. That's fine. The other thing that's interesting about this, especially this conversation happening in Miami, where you have a lot of these illegals who come up, like from Cuba, for instance, on these makeshift rafts. Are they really going to be deterred by alligators? Because, like, they've gone through sharks. They've, if they're coming up with members of the drug cartel through Central America, I just don't think alligators are going to be the deterrent that maybe the right is acting like they will be.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, I was thinking, like, a lot of these illegal immigrants come through some of, like, the worst territory that you could possibly find on this half of the world, like between Central and South America, up through Mexico, the Rio Grande, the Florida Straits. Like, these aren't paved highways, the easy road. This is really tough terrain these people have crossed to get to America. So I kind of feel like the Everglades might be like kindergarten for them, you know?
Right. They'll never find the Everglades if they get away. I mean, they won't find their body, I mean, because they're not going to survive out there. That is brutal climate. But, like, yeah, the Rio Grande, people would die trying to cross the Rio Grande all the time. And then the very next day, migrants would be trying to float across again. So I don't know that the fear of death has dissuaded them in the past from trying to come to the United States. So, but I like it. I think it makes for a good headline.
I like it too. I mean, I have like my ins and outs about it, but I think all the things that I don't like about it, there's already solutions for. Like, I love the environment. I think DeSantis has put a lot of effort into preserving the Everglades. And the fact that he mentions that, like, we're gonna, if they can take control of the space, because this airfield is actually owned by Miami-Dade County.
Yeah.
And so they would have to basically purchase it from Miami-Dade County. And then if he wants to really return it back to the earth, I think that that's great. I think that, you know, rather than forgetting about this big old slab of concrete, putting it to use and then letting it go back to the Everglades, I think kind of sums up any and solves any issues I have with it.
Yeah, I'd be less worried about the alligators than I would the bugs. I feel like being out there in the middle of the Everglades in this swampy, sweaty, hot, bug-infested area would bother me, because the bugs are coming in, for sure. That would bother me much more than the alligators.
Well, and we haven't even mentioned the snakes. We also have snakes, big, big snakes. Well, and I think that that would also be more scary to me than the alligators.
Yeah.
Alligators are pretty lazy.
You know, there's a solution to all of this. Don't come into the country illegally, and you won't wind up at Alligator Alcatraz. All right, Miranda, I meant to ask you, how was covering the, we didn't see last week. We sent you out to cover the No Kings protests in Miami, pretty small compared to other places.
Yeah, I'd say there's maybe 2,000, maybe 3,000 at the highest point of it. It all wrapped up pretty soon. The only like assaulting feature of the whole thing was the sun. It was so hot out. Like, nobody was out there longer than they needed to be. I saw a couple people carried away on stretchers from heat exhaustion, but like, people were dancing, singing, like, it was very chill, totally probably a different vibe than a lot of what you guys see out there. There was a handful of Trump supporters that were, of course, getting in verbal altercations back and forth with protesters, but overall, pretty chill.
Pretty chill. All right. Well, Miranda, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Have a good weekend.
It's not even controversial anymore.
Not even
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
That's what they'll be hearing outside Alligator Alcatraz, just meowing. Like, where's the meowing coming from? It's the alligators. Little did you know, they don't make any other noise. They just meow. Really quick update. So I talked about two things that have happened during the Portland riots, and I actually didn't realize it's the same thing. So I mentioned that one of the rioters brandished and then threw a machete at the federal agents. That's the rioter that got tased in the back and face planted. So the video shows this like big machete type thing, and then he kind of starts to tosses it in the direction of officers. Katie Davis Court just tweeted out that rioter, again, the Christopher Hudson, aka Julie Winters, now faces a federal felony aggravated assault on a law enforcement charge. And also, given the circumstances in the video, they're lucky that they weren't shot. That's deadly force, right? That would absolutely be a justifiable situation to use deadly force. They multiple times ordered him to put down the machete, wouldn't do it. And then as they approached him, he threw it at him. So he's lucky that he was tased in the back and face planted and not shot dead. Absolutely insane stuff. All right, we will get to our subscriber poll, which has to do with the immigration issues that we just discussed. First, our friend Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com. I had a great conversation with Wes about the real estate market right now, because I was noting on the show yesterday that the rich neighborhood in where I live, all these homes started going up for sale at the same time. And there's usually no homes for sale in that neighborhood. And they're all in like the $2 to $4 million price range. And I was like, that's so weird. Why are they all going up at the same time? And I talked to Wes about it. And he does definitely think the taxes that were just passed, you know, the increase in the cap gains, B&O tax, and even the death tax. He said, if you're somebody in the state right now who has really any amount of money, but you're getting a little bit older and you want to pass money along to your loved ones, this has become a really expensive state to die with money in, because there is more that's going to be taken by the government. If you're retired here, you pass away, they're going to take a huge chunk of it. So it's just something, it was interesting. I had a great conversation with him about it. He says people continue, it's in this ramp up of people selling their homes in Washington to move elsewhere. He even told me that some are saying that they're going to, wait, Palm Desert? Is that California, Palm Desert? Yeah. And he said, to escape the politics of Washington, he's heard from people going that are selling their home in Washington to go to California. So does that mean Washington's officially crazier than California? I don't know about that.
Yeah, different taxes. I guess if you're retired, because they have an income tax, I believe, right? But
yeah,
I don't know.
Crazy. Interesting crazy things people do. So regardless of the reason that you're selling your home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones. He knows the market well. He's been doing it for a long time. He'll start by giving you a free market analysis so you can kind of get an idea of how well you can expect your home to perform, how quickly it'll sell, all that stuff. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right. Given all the immigration stories, I asked subscribers in our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals and X, do you think President Donald Trump is being too heavy-handed on immigration enforcement? Is it going to backfire? Is he too heavy-handed? Nicole, yes or no?
No, I don't.
No, I sure don't.
There's a couple situations where it seems unfortunate that it wasn't handled differently. I don't think that comes directly from Trump. I think that's probably in a case-by-case situation. There's a couple of cases that I think have been a little bit questionable. But who am I? I don't know. I don't have the file.
Yeah. Yeah, the workplace enforcements, I get that they don't go over well. I do think they're justifiable, though. When you've got these workforces that are, you know, these workplaces where you've got 20, 30, 40 people who are illegal and have false documents, that's a bigger sort of scheme, right? So I'm in favor of enforcing the nation's immigration laws. I do think, though, a lot of the negative headlines are stemming from the reality that sanctuary policies have created on the ground. So we talk a lot about like, oh, he rounded up this mom with a baby or whatever it is. Well, okay, was that mom hanging out with an MS-13 gang member who had a deportation order on him? So like by sending ICE out into the communities, they're forcing them basically. They're forcing their hand to arrest more bystanders, so to speak. Like there's more collateral damage because the sanctuary policies more than anything else. 90% of you saying no, he's not being too heavy handed, although some of you said yes, he is, about 10%. Joni, we need the workers. It's fine to go after those who commit actual crimes. If conservatives were serious, they would reform the immigration process so that we could get the workers. I doubt that you are willing to clean other people's toilets or pick cherries if push comes to shove, an unpopular opinion, I'm sure. Yeah, I mean, look, I think that there's, you know, a lot of people on the left tend to use that, like, who's going to clean your toilets, Donald Trump thing. And immigrants do a lot more in our country than menial labor. I mean, some of the most talented tech workers are immigrants who came here legally, certainly. And I don't know that I disagree with the notion that there are a lot of immigrants who come here and do that kind of labor, the farm work and the cleaning and all that stuff, because we've allowed it to happen for so long. And now we have an economy that is really actually reliant on illegal labor. I do agree that conservatives should be working with Democrats to fix our broken immigration system so we can have people coming here more quickly, more easily on legal visas to be able to work on it, even on a seasonal basis. The problem is whenever one party's in power, if they want to fix immigration, the other party won't play ball, and then vice versa. Like, that's why the Dreamers issue has never been fixed, even though it's a pretty popular idea to give citizenship to the Dreamers and then end the program. Mm-hmm. But like, they've been here for 20, 30 years and were bought as kids, but they still can't get it done. Even when Republicans tried, Democrats wanted, you know, they had all these, they were using them as pawns and leverage mm-hmm. and all these things.
It's just interesting to me the way that, you know, Patty Murray and I'm seeing Jayapal and all these people, you know, so mad that people are getting taken out of the orchards, things like that.
Yeah.
But then, on the other hand, you keep forcing us to raise the minimum wage. And
right.
so you've made it impossible for these people to employ, like, you know, high schoolers and things mm-hmm. like that, that can't work this to the same extent. So then they're forced to do these different things. So it's just funny to me. But you're okay. You want them to be paid less under the table.
Yeah.
Like, that's what you're fighting
for. It's
weird,
isn't it?
Right?
Yeah.
And then, but yeah, some of the situations that I was talking about were, you know, the people that have been here for 40 years, but 30 years ago broke the law. But then you go back to what Arnold Schwarzenegger was making the case, like, you come here, treat it right, I guess, or it yeah. could come back to bite you in the ass at some point.
Yeah, there's a lot of like hypocrisy going around. Mm-hmm. And again, like, if Democrats truly just want it to be focused on the violent criminals, they need to come out and message that, because their messaging right now has been like, oh, it's all wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so use a little nuance. Say, hey, we totally support and we'll help you in any way we can getting rid of the violent criminals. However, we have an issue with these enforcements and our economy mm-hmm. can't stand it. So I think if both sides were willing to use a little nuance, we'd be in a much better situation. All right.
I wonder how long this is going to go. I mean, it's going to be interesting.
That's the only thing. We only have a limited amount of time to get it done. So he's going to, it's going to be balls to the wall, for lack of a better phrase.
But it can't be like this for the full 4 years. So
yeah, sure it can.
It could, but I just think it'll
like
run
millions.
Out eventually.
Yeah. Right? Kathleen, I want criminals and gang members arrested and deported. I would like to see an effort to register hardworking illegal immigrants with the promise of green cards and eventually citizenship if they can be contributing members of society, get rid of the bad and keep the good. Yeah, there has to be some. That's kind of like the option they're giving people to self-deport, where you'll have an opportunity to come back through legal means. And if you don't do that and we catch you, you're never coming back. But I think if you've been here 10, 20 years, you've mm-hmm. been working. If you haven't been paying taxes, then you have to get caught up on taxes or you can never become a legal citizen. So there has to be some, because you can't just say, all right, blanket amnesty. And then what happens the next time there's a Democratic president who opens the borders again? And then in 20 years, we'll be giving all them blanket amnesty. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't, I don't know, it's just a messed up situation. David, I'd prefer a focus on more recent violators and criminals, but I'm okay with targeting all illegals. Spokane Valley girl, if other leaders had followed the law to begin with, Trump wouldn't have to do what he's doing. Enforcing the law is not being heavy-handed. Good comments, per the usual, everyone. And a little disagreement is never a bad thing on the show. We love that. Love it. All right, let's get to other comments on other topics. Sign stealer caught in the act. Papa Woody, $5 super chat. Jeremy Roos is running as well for a cool board, local business owner for a school board. Local business owner and a good dude. Okay, we'll look him up. Bolt up. Everyone should have a friend named Nicole talking about. Yeah, I agree.
Agreed.
Talking about Ryan's friend Nicole who owns a bar. Everyone should have a friend named Nicole who owns a bar. Where's your bar?
Yeah, where's my bar?
I feel like I can see you in retirement owning like a beach bar in Hawaii.
Yes, that I bring my pet monkey to every day.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, and your spring hat. I can see that. That would be like Nicole's ideal
or pig.
Retirement.
Maybe a pet pig.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
All right, adorable, deplorable. My Ryan Smith sign was stolen last week. Got my new sign and cameras up. Oh my gosh, let us know if you capture anything on camera. We'd love to see it.
Yes.
On the Portland rider who face planted after getting tased, Avery Roscoe. Oh, and Chaz Chop was just like Woodstock too, referring to it being referred to as a block party. Yes, every block party I go to, they're throwing machetes at federal agents.
When I saw that headline, I had to bring it up and be, are we talking about the same thing?
There's
no
way.
I wasn't really sure.
Because there's no way the news would call this a block party. Like, that's crazy. But this, the taser thing reminded me of, is it The Hangover when they're in Vegas?
Yes.
And then they get arrested and they said, we'll let you go, but you have to volunteer to be our taser thing.
Yep.
And the kid tases him. He's like, in the face. I know it wasn't in the face, but he face planted. I got a lot of enjoyment about it. I'm just going to be honest. Sherry on the Portland Rider. I've seen Brandy and Nicole in person and neither one of them needs filters. That
How
is so
sweet.
Nice. You know, in fact, people always tell me you are so much prettier in person.
Well, there you
Which
go.
I'm kind of like, is that a compliment? But I'd rather be prettier in person than be like, oh, you're way prettier on video. So
natural.
The camera adds
like
10
natural.
Pounds, okay. Keeping Families Together at Killing Kids. Law Pickett on Facebook says, meantime, drug addicts pass out during drug use and the boxes are left open. Yeah, that's the whole, what a dumb idea. What kind of bureaucrat comes up with an idea of let's give them a free lockbox? As soon as you use that fentanyl and you're in the mindset to use the fentanyl, you're not thinking, okay, now take this out, unwrap my arm ski, get it all in there, make sure it's all okay, you're fed, just, you're good, you're good.
Lysol all this right, real quick.
Just, you know, and then pass out. It's just the stupidest thing. I mean, absolutely insane. If I'm ever governor of the state, I'm finding the person whose idea that was, and I'm firing them immediately. Urine bottle mystery, Matthew Cook, $10 super chat. You're in over your head with this story. Thank you. I love that you gave us $10 to tell a dad joke.
Yep.
Salty Dog on YouTube, peeing in a jug and leaving it for someone else must be the latest recycling program. Yeah, maybe it's good like plant food.
Ugh.
Or something, you know? I don't know. On the $30 car tab, frustration, people not paying their car tabs because they're over it. Kristen on Patreon, I didn't renew my car tabs because I have better things to spend the $650 on. Insane. Just need to go one more week here without getting caught in Washington before I move back to my hometown in Texas. I love that. I love that you're going to get away with it. That makes me so happy.
I mean, all you have to do is not speed. Don't use the HOV lanes when you're not allowed to, and you're good.
But honestly,
you can't get pulled over for it.
Right. But honestly, Kristen, I would say if you told any cop, I didn't pay it because of this, I'm going to Texas next week, they'll let you go.
Not any cop.
Most.
But like I said, that it's an add-on.
And
thing.
Then say I'm also, Brandy Cruz told me.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, then you might.
That if I say this, I'll get off this ticket. Special treatment for sure. Renee Kipola on YouTube got pulled over after 2 years without paying tabs. The police asked why I didn't renew, and I told him we voted and they took it away. He did give me a ticket. Oh, okay. But it was still a fraction of the tabs for 2 years. So even if you got a ticket, it wasn't as much as the tabs would have cost, although insurance too can be a little, the premiums going up can be hurt.
Oh, if you get a
can
ticket.
Be hard. Yeah, if you get a ticket.
Well, that's not a moving violation though, so you don't get a,
unless it was like in combination with a moving violation.
Yeah, the speeding ticket would, but if you just get a ticket for tabs, it's like $100 and something bucks and that's not a moving violation.
Yeah, you're right. Good point, Renee, good point. On Florida Report, Diplubris Unum. Sorry. I hope they don't give the alligators indigestion. Yes, those alligators are going to be well fed if people try to escape. Sherry Heist, they may prefer the alligators to the coyotes. I don't know. I think I'd rather take on a coyote because I'd befriend the coyote. The alligator, there's no reasoning with it.
Well, but the alligator, all you got to do is hold their nose.
Oh, is it that easy?
I mean, when you
the animal whisper, all you have to do is hold their nose.
But if there's a lot of them, it's a lot of noses to hold, right? So you can,
yeah, and also like army of them. You have to get close enough to it to grab its snout and shut it. I'd like to see this, actually. Does anybody have an alligator sanctuary? We would love to come. I'd love to come see how easy it is. Yeah. Just hold your nose.
That's, you know.
You are an animal whisperer, though, so I feel like you'd go up there and be like, hello, can I hold your nose?
Alligator?
And he'd be like, sure.
I keep hearing that old Red song in my head, Blake Shelton's Old Red, where you just have to get a female alligator over there looking pretty, and then they just run this way. That's Old Red, that song. That's what they do. Old Red guards the jail.
Oh, that's
and
right.
And then they bring in a female dog, and he goes that way, and the jail escapees
and that's how they
go
get
the
away.
Other way.
Yes. You just get a female alligator. Put the moves on. Yeah. Distracting. All right. On Patreon, E, delaying the hearing until the autumn on the BIAW gas ban case could be a win, especially if there is a power outage for the higher up judge and they don't have electricity and a generator. Yet more time for them to come to their senses by having a power outage. Old Sub Sailor. Whoops.
The Titsies photo.
Oh,
I always
yeah.
think of it because you call it.
State Senator Emily Randall. Voting for a gas ban and then posting a picture warming her tootsies on a gas fireplace that her neighbors had. Thank God for gas fireplaces and friendly neighbors. Yeah, interesting. Hmm. And now she's a member of Congress.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, they fail up. Old Sub Sailor with a general thought. Can you imagine what your great-grandparents would say about our society today? My dad is 95 and all of it makes him so sad.
Yeah. I think about that sometimes. About my grandpa, I'm like, well, he went just in time.
You know what I think about?
He wouldn't
about?
Have survived COVID, I don't think. Not the COVID virus, but the just
reaction.
Being
yeah.
locked down like that.
I think a lot about, like, what if you took someone from ancient times and just transported them into modern times?
Like Encino Man.
They just, it's a movie?
Yeah.
Oh, Here, I thought it was some unique concept. Well, apparently there's a movie about it.
Hollywood, okay. I got an idea.
Yeah. It's just, I told you I'm not good at Hollywood trivia stuff.
Oh, man. Good
Can
stuff.
We just go to the sanity check today? Just sanity check. All right. So you might have heard these headlines circulating around. So after the bombs on Iran, speaking of, after they bombed Iran, they came out and Pete Hegseth was just talking about the mission and the boys in the bombers and how proud he was of the military. And the media headlines started instantly. The New York Times, Pete Hegseth refers to boys in bombers, except one of the fighter pilots was a woman. And this was within an hour of the mission. That's what the New York Times was focused on. So Pete Hegseth had a press conference and he was asked about this whole boys in bombers thing. And the reaction's pretty good.
Acknowledge the female pilots that also participated in this mission. The early messages that you sent out only congratulated the boys.
So when I say something like our boys in bombers, see, this is the kind of thing the press does, right? Of course, the chairman mentioned a female bomber pilot. That's fantastic. She's fantastic. She's a hero. I want more female bomber pilots. I hope the men and women of our country sign up to do such brave and audacious things. But when you spin it as, because I say our boys in bombers as a common phrase, I'll keep saying things like that, whether they're men or women, very proud of that female pilot, just like I'm very proud of those male pilots. And I don't care if it's a male or a female in that cockpit, and the American people don't care. But it's the obsession with race and gender in this department that's changed priorities. We don't do that anymore. We don't play your little games.
Love it. If the media was being consistent, they would have asked, why didn't you acknowledge the birthing person? Right. The birthing person who, what else do they call them? Birthing person, ovary. What do they call, what was the gross one? It was like semen intaker or something. Anyway, we're not doing that anymore. That has been your closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided and this week's episodes of Undivided. As always, we have a great episode of Sundays with Subscribers coming up. We're going to talk about this the latest move for blue states to blame their budget woes on the president of the United States. And also, we're going to talk more about why on earth the state decided to defund a care facility for drug-addicted babies. There's clearly more to it than just the budget crisis. So that and more coming up on Sundays with Subscribers. If you're not a subscriber, it's pretty simple to become one. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com, and then you just click on the banner that says support the show for $5, and we would absolutely appreciate it. That is how we make this show possible in all these glorious good times we have on the show. Anything else, Nicole?
Yeah, I'm good.
Just close it.
Just close it up.
Close
their mouth.
All right. See you guys on Sunday. For non-subscribers, we'll see you back on the show Monday at noon.